ABC Grandstand. For sports coverage like no other. Grandstand. AFL.
It's the team that bring you AFL news from on and off the field. Welcome to the Sunday Inquisition. You're with Grandstand.
When last we saw them on a Thursday night at the Adelaide Oval, the Crows, with a heart and soul performance, retrieved their season. Now they come to Melbourne to face Carlton at the MCG, and the challenge is to back it up.
They wanted Jenkins, it cleared he and Keith. Jenkins got a chance at the back, trying to get his boot to it. I think he did! McKay gets a kick up to half forward. Jenkins at ground level, pushes his way clear, gets into his boot, and he snaps his third! Away to Grundy, that's the deep in the goal square, they're working in tight confinement, Langdon lost it, Adelaide looming, the hand pass to Douglas, who snaps the goal on the left foot. Good job by Marley Williams, Sloan trying to get it for Adelaide, the 1-2 with Wright, steps around traffic, 1-2, back to Wright, they have the numbers, away to Cameron, and the youngster, the debutant, able to finish. It's it wide of Cameron, who tries to tap into his advantage. In front of the bench, good battle. And Cameron came up with it, the debutant. He kicks it in the middle of the ground. Kerridge is on the break. He gets to 40 metres out. Hand busts over the top to Jenkins. And Jenkins picks his form, but put it down to Cameron.
Ball will kick the full forward. And the night may very well end with Elliott. But it's rapturous applause around the Adelaide Oval from 50,000 because that is what a response looks like.
Brenton Sanderson, the coach of the Adelaide Crows, has come by the studio on the way to the MCG. Welcome to the Sunday Inquisition,
Brenton. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's a great privilege of ours to have you in here, so thank you. The stakes this afternoon, they're high because you can't just do that as a one-off.
No, you're right. I mean, we're 4-4 and we're just sitting outside of the eight. So it feels like every game is super important. But particularly, you know, the last game on the Sunday too, you've seen every game, you understand what's at stake, and we simply have to win this game.
The effort that you got in response to challenging times, which we'll dig into, would be, I imagine, non-negotiable this afternoon. How do you know you'll get it?
Yeah, that's the challenge, I guess, is to replicate form. And part of that as a coach is providing, I guess, systems and strategy that then you hope that the players are able to execute. And that has to be player driven. I know I can't yell and scream every game to try and get a reaction from individuals. At sport at this level, you need a certain amount of adrenaline to be driven by your leaders and also by your players. If you walk into the MCG today not expecting to play at 100% intensity, you're going to get exposed. And we can see, and you see all the time now, if you've got half a dozen players who are 2 or 3% off their best, you're going to get really badly embarrassed. And that happened to us for a half against Melbourne about 2 weeks ago. And fortunately, we saw a four-quarter performance, which was a great response to that disappointing half against Melbourne.
If I asked you, what did you learn about coaching over that 2.5-week block? And if we just took the trigger moments, losing to Melbourne, the review, which we understand was fierce, the 5AA interview, which was just so raw and honest, the wait, and then the response of the players to buy into clearly what was demanded of them. What did you learn across that phase?
I guess the challenge for me is every player, and I'm managing 47 players in a squad, you have to be very careful how you... I guess, address and discuss form, players' personal lives. I mean, quite often there's a lot of things going on with individuals which they bring to work, and you might yell at one player and get a fantastic response. The next player, you have to, you know, tip them on, tip them in honey and cuddle them and look for ways to increase their confidence. And every player is different. Every player has different triggers to get the best out of them. And being a good coach is also being a good manager, is understanding how you can't tip it over the edge with players. And as I mentioned before, I can't walk into the MCG meeting room today half an hour before the game and yell and scream and rant because I won't get the same response that we got against Collingwood. As I said, systems, strategy, and then it must be player driven by a strong leadership group.
Did you feel like it was high stakes for you that 2 weeks?
Oh, not so much. I mean, I know, and this is a blood sport now. This is it was me that week. Last week it was Damien Hardwick after the Melbourne loss. For the first three rounds of this season, it was Mick Malthouse. You know, the blowtorch was firmly turned on, and even Paul Roos was exposed to some criticism, you know, taking the job for the wrong reasons early on. And now that's quickly swung, you know, what a fantastic job he's doing. I mean, we are very open to criticism, and we certainly get whacked and when we deserve it. But internally, and I guess personally, you have to just keep the ship on course, and you can't let yourself deviate to every bit of criticism that comes your way. So I've got a really strong principles that I think about coaching in football, and I won't deviate too much from them. Yes, the game plan has to constantly be tweaked, but never huge, you know, 180 degree turns. As I said, principles remain. Game plan tweaks have to occur, but not radical shifts in principles or also game plan. And we'll stay the course. We've had some challenges along the way this season, which we haven't hidden from, whether that be injuries, and you know, we lost poor Dean Bailey, you know, a week before the season, which was a terrible tragedy for us and one we had to overcome. And we lost our first three games. Three good sides beat us. Since then, we've won four of the last five. Taylor Walker back last week felt like the spirit was back within our group. And I hate to single out one player, but when the number 13 jumper runs out for us, our boys walk taller. And I think we saw that last weekend.
Your routine on game day. So what did you do yesterday? Have you had the guts of the team meeting?
Yeah, we have what's called a captain's run, which I think most clubs call it that, where we have a strategy meeting with the players. We go through the areas that we need to address to beat Carlton. We'll also go through how Carlton play. Then we have a very short training session, which is run by the playing group. We jump on a plane, and then pretty much from once we arrive here last night at 5 o'clock, the players are left to their own devices to prepare themselves to play well. The only thing they've done today at 11:30, they went for a walk into Albert Park and you know, had a stretch, had a bit of a chat. They flick around a couple of tennis balls just to awaken the reflexes, and then we'll jump in the bus and head down the MCG soon. And we arrive at the ground about 2 hours before. And from there, the players gradually build that energy and that excitement and hopefully enter the MCG in a ruthless frame of mind.
And you? Are you a twitchy person on
Yeah, I'm very morning? Nervous. I'm very nervous now. I'm very anxious now. I mean, we're 3.5 hours or 3 hours away from the umpire bouncing the ball. So the players don't see that, though. They'll see a calm, relaxed coach. Players certainly feed off the energy of the leaders. And obviously, being the senior coach, if I walk in and I'm, you know, stumbling across my words or, you know, very jittery, look like there's a bit of panic, then the players feed off that. They can sense, they can smell blood in the water, I guess. And so, yeah, I need to ensure that when I get on the bus in half an hour's time, that they see a coach that's confident, relaxed, and has self-belief in his team.
Do you muck around with ideas all morning, or can you put it aside? Did you watch the basketball for a while or something else to take your mind off it?
Yeah, I do. I do try and switch off. I mean, like Scotty, I love my American sport, and I'll look to be distracted at different times. But I've had it's called a what-if meeting, which the players never hear, the players never see, but the coaches sit down and we try and go through every possible thing that could go wrong in this game today. And we normally start with if our ruckman got hurt, because most teams now pick one genuine ruckman. Number one on the agenda is always Sam Jacobs gets hurt in the first quarter. What are we going to do? The reason we do that is because with the anxiety associated with the pressures of in a quarter or in a match, it's hard to make good decisions. There's so much happening. So we sit down with a cup of coffee and a couple of donuts, and we actually go through worst case scenarios in a lot of our game plan. So then we'll say, okay, Jacobs gets injured. Okay, Podziadli's going to take the ruck in the front half and Jenkins will take the ruck in the back half. And we write that down in a notebook. David Noble, our GM of footy, when that happens or if that happens, he'll just calmly flick to that page in the notebook. And this is what we discussed, you know, 4 or 5 hours ago. So that actually prepares us really well. That gives me great confidence that when tragedy or if tragedy does strike, that we've actually talked about it very calmly, rather than in the heat of battle.
And how has experience, this is your third year, how have you evolved over that period? Or can you sense you're the same person you were before game number three as you are now?
No, I feel very different. I feel, and I was very fortunate. Our first season, 2012, was a prelim final where we actually led with 3 minutes to go. We were on our way to a grand final. We finished the regular season with 17 wins and 5 losses. And I think it felt that year that, you know, with myself coming in as a fresh, young senior coach, you know, Darren Milburn coming out of retirement at Geelong, you know, we introduced some key new people. We got some players back from injury. The excitement of, you know, the improvement of Dangerfield and Sloan and Jacobs, Walker, it was just fantastic. And unfortunately, you know, we lost Kurt Tippett to Sydney. The club was investigated for his contract. We lost draft picks. Dean Bailey was suspended for the Melbourne tanking inquiry. Our CEO was suspended for 6 months. We've had a few challenges since then, and we've done our very best to fight through some of those challenges. And with every day, it seems like there's something new to stand up and fight for. And but internally, I must admit, this is an exceptional young playing group. I'm really, I'm going to say, I'm loving coaching this group. I'm very attached to them. I feel their pain. That doesn't sound good. I understand when they're hurting, and I feel like a big brother to them at times, or a young father. But I feel like a big brother to them at times. But other times, I need to make sure that relationship and that distance between the players is separated.
Brenton Sanderson is with us on the Sunday Inquisition, the Adelaide Crows coach. Scott Gullen and Stan Elves.
I'm interested, champ, on your coaching philosophy. And has it had to change, or has it evolved? If you can share with us, perhaps when you first went in, and then you said in your third season, has it changed and has it evolved?
No, it hasn't. That's one thing for me which doesn't change is my coaching philosophy. And I learned that from Kevin Sheedy. And, you know, Sheedy was in the game for almost 30 years as a coach. And I remember him talking one day. He said his philosophies are exactly the same as when he first started coaching, but his game plans have changed in that 30-year period, you know. And there's certain things. If you look at some coaches, you can tell whether they persist with senior players or whether they blood young players. For example, for me, I love giving young players opportunities. And we saw with Charlie Cameron last week, you know, this kid's only played about 35 games of football, not just at the highest level. He's only played 35 games of football. He ran out onto the Adelaide Oval last weekend in a must-win game for us. But I had great confidence because I could see that he could offer something to us with his speed, his tackling, his excitement. For me, that was an easy decision. Externally, it might have been seen as a risky one, but one of my principles is I'm happy to play young players. I think some coaches maybe go the other way. They like the tried, the players that they feel like they can trust over a 10-year period. And there's probably maybe 8 to 10 of those principles for me, which are non-negotiables. So for me as well, contested ball. And that probably comes out of my experience at Geelong being coached and working alongside Mark Thompson. And you see that now with Ken Hinckley, Brendan McCartney, obviously Bomber Thompson out Essendon. A lot of those clubs are playing similar principle football, which is, you know, win contested ball. For me, that's the sort of players that I need to draft and to coach, is those players that can embrace a contest. And for me, that's what wins finals. I think some clubs, unfortunately, play away through the regular home and away season, which they can win their 12, 13, 14 games. But that game plan breaks down in September when tackling goes up, contested ball goes up. And you can see, I mean, that's like a great example is Sydney. You know, Sydney play September football for the entire season. And their game plan won't change through the whole year. Yeah, they'll lose a couple of games, which maybe you thought they would win, but they're playing away through the entire season, which wins games in September. And that's what Port Adelaide are doing. That's what Geelong has done for 10 years. And for me, that's, I guess, a principle which we'll try and maintain.
Have you got your philosophies written down?
Yeah, very much so. I presented them to the board when I was trying to get the job.
Do you revisit them from time to time?
Constantly, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just for your own referral and your own peace of mind. But principles remain. Game plan must change.
You mentioned playing young players like a Cameron. I'm interested when they come in, because I think there's two ways you handle it. You see a lot of kids come in because they're getting a game because somebody's injured and they're just going to be in and they know they're going out. And when they come in, not expectations are great on them, but when they come in, are those non-negotiables exactly the same for them and they're getting paid because they're expected to deliver?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we kept it very simple for Charlie last week. I told him, and he would have got, I can imagine the sort of advice that he would have received from friends, family, even people at our football club. But I said to him, there's three people I want you to listen to only. And everybody else that gives you advice, just politely nod and say thank you very much. But Sanderson, Bickley and Eddie Betts are the only three people that I want you to listen to. So rather than fill his head with so much, stuff going into a game, he had to filter out everything else that he received last week. And the senior coach, his line coach, and his best friend and the person that he lives with, I thought were the three best people to receive advice from last week.
Fantastic. Just listening to you before, and I was really fascinated because a response to one of Jared's questions that you talked about pressures that come on, and so many were not related to the actual game. And I'm just thinking, wow, that's going to be tough in itself, but what about in a footy-mad state or a town like Adelaide where the pressure's on? How do you maintain your sanity?
Yeah, it's difficult. I must admit, it's hard not to absorb some of the critiquing, and I must admit, if we're playing poorly, I'm happy to receive negative press because we don't deserve. I mean, no one should fool us by saying, yeah, you're playing really well if you're losing. And like I said, though, I think I try to filter through the stuff that I don't believe in. And as I said, we've got a lot of good players still out of our side. You know, Tom Lynch, Brad Crouch, Ricky Henderson, our captain Nathan Van Berlo. I'd love to get our best 22 together. I think we'd certainly challenge most sides in the competition. But for whatever reasons, we've had some unlucky bad breaks, you know, with broken legs. And, you know, Nathan Van Berlo, our captain, got injured from a weight sled. You know, a weight sled sliced his Achilles. You know, we've just had some horrible examples. But we haven't complained about it. We've picked a fit 22 each week, and we expect to win most games that we play.
Can you switch off, though? Do you have that capacity to actually switch off? Or you are a 24/7 himself? Are you one of those blokes who wakes up in the middle of the night and you've got the pad by the desk?
Yeah. No, that's me. That's definitely me. But it's funny, as Jared said, you know, in 2012 when we 17 wins, 5 losses, I could switch off easy. I was going to the movies, and I was going to cafes. But last year, you know, 10 wins, 12 losses, we just missed the finals. That's the 24/7 coach, you know, when you're just constantly coming up with ideas, and you certainly seek the opinions of people that you trust, you know. So I'll call Nathan Buckley, I'll call Mark Thompson, I'll call Brendan McCartney, just to sort of bounce off a couple of ideas, you know. Not trying to pinch information or pinch game plan things, but certainly speak to people that you really value their opinion, and I think that's what keeps me sane.
What about at home? I don't think I'm bragging confidence. I think Stan used to have the magnets on the fridge and Judy would have a say.
No.
But do you...
Only the good moves.
Does it encroach at home?
My wife, and we've just got a little baby now. We've got a 5-month-year-old, which is the best thing I ever did. I wish I did it 10 years earlier, but... that gives me great balance. And my wife now has a rule. I have to be home by 6 because that's Christina's time for a bath. Mm-hmm. That's my role. So 6 till 9, phones off, and that's wife and baby time. So as Stan said, you know, 24/7, well, 21 hours of the day is footy. 3 hours is my wife and our little one. But that's been great balance for me, I must admit. And like most wives, mine has a strong opinion on selection and how we should be playing. But certainly, there's a lot of encouragement at home too, which is great.
You mentioned Dean Bailey. Can you give us an insight into what he did for you and then how challenging, obviously, that period to handle for everyone at the club?
Yeah, it was horrible for us, Scotty. We, Dean started to get really sick around Christmas time, and we're preparing. You know, we're only probably 10 weeks away from the start of the season, and things got pretty serious about 6 weeks out from the start of the season. And unfortunately, when Dean passed away, you know, and I've been asked, you know, off the record, why didn't you replace Dean? You know, why didn't why couldn't you get another, you know, senior assistant in? And You can't. You just can't do that. When a guy's lying in hospital getting chemotherapy and radiation, you can't go in and visit him and say, "Oh, by the way, we've appointed your replacement," because this guy was fighting an incredible battle, you know, and he had the support of the footy club. The players were fantastic in generating so much enthusiasm for him, and we'd go in there in small groups and just talk about training. And so when he passed, you know, that was a horrible time for all of us. And I thought our boys were so brave against Geelong in that first game. You know, we got within a couple of points in the last quarter. Actually, we hit the front, I think, in the last quarter and ended up losing by 40 points. And that really knocked us around. That hit us for six because we felt like we gave everything we possibly could. And in the end, the Cats were too good. But, you know, we really wanted to win that one for Dean, and we couldn't do it. But there's some people working behind the scenes, you know, David Noble, Paddy Steinfort, Mark Bickley. They're doing some great things to ensure that we're not, that we're, you know, these guys are wearing two or three different hats during the week to ensure that we're covering some of the stuff that Dean did. But you just can't replace a guy like him. You know, obviously, I know Kenny Hinckley really well. His right-hand man is Phil Walsh. You know, what a fantastic resource and asset to have sitting alongside you on game day. I don't have that this year, but we're on the search now for someone to step into that role next season.
And I think you said a couple of weeks ago, dropping Brent Riley on the eve of his 200th, that, I think you just say that was your hardest call in 3 years.
Yeah, that was really tough, and we came off the Melbourne loss and had a bye. So that for me, that
time
was,
to think of it.
Yeah, that was like Stan said. You know, that's just sitting awake in a dark room at night and and just thinking, what am I going to do here? And I think the best decision we made there for Brent was to leave him out. But when we bring him back, he's going to be in good form. He's going to take good form into his 200th game, and he'll play 200 games without question. He's been a great player for us over, you know, 10 or 12 seasons. And when we select him, he'll be in good form. He'll come in, and I'm sure we're going to have a fair crack at winning, and we'll celebrate his win. I don't think he would have felt comfortable, you know, saying we're just going to play because it's your 200th. I don't think that was the right way to coach.
You've been a player. I mean, was it? Does someone go and tell him you've got to meet Sando in the office or what?
Yeah, I spoke to him a couple of times that week on the telephone leading in, just saying, you know, we're fully supportive of you. We haven't lost any faith in you. This is going to come down to the wire, so don't...
So he sort of knew he was in a little bit of trouble.
Well, yeah, his family are from here in Melbourne, obviously little incidentals like, you know, the cheer squad have to prepare a banner and all those sort of things. So we can't just pull the trigger, you know, 2 days before the game. We have to prepare players. So I just said to Brent, you know, this could go either way. And unfortunately, ultimately, match committee, we made a decision to leave him out. To his credit, he handled it like a man. His teammates love him and they rallied around him. And as I said, when he comes back into our side, he'll come in good form, and I'm sure he'll play well and we'll celebrate his 200th in style.
Do you draw on your times as a player? I gather you would have been called in and...
Yeah, I got dropped for a grand final. Course, yeah, I got dropped for the 95 grand final, which the Cats lost, unfortunately. But I always, if I got the opportunity to be a senior coach, I was always going to coach the way that I wanted to be coached. And that was a combination of all the experience I had as a player. So fortunately, I was lucky. I was coached by Graham Corns, Lee Matthews, Gary Ayres, and Bomber Thompson. And I guess I'm the sum of those guys. I'm the sum of all the good bits of all of those guys. And I've got my own negative bits too. If we had the 47 players in my team all come in one by one, that'd tell you a lot of stuff that I can improve on.
But
I try to take the good parts out of all those coaches that I actually enjoyed.
You're a plain speaking coach, and that was true right from the outset. Has that served you well?
I think, back home, as Stan said, I mean, we're constantly in the media and we're constantly asked to be, I guess, addressing the Adelaide people. And I'd call it how I see it. I don't try and hide behind any, you know, smoke and mirrors or anything. I'll typically be honest. If you ask me a question, I'll answer it. And I don't like to play games. I'm still very young when it comes to being... I guess experienced with the media traps. You know, I can be set up for getting the response that you want sometimes. But I think in good times and in the challenging times, I'll be honest with our fans and our supporters. And I'll be that way probably until ultimately I lose my job.
I want to jump you back while I was listening to your response again. I love that fact that you would talk through scenarios and the importance of being probably proactive rather than reactive and not getting caught up in the emotion of the game. But how critical, therefore, is that to have, I know you talked about loss of Dean, but how important it is to have good support staff and to trust them?
It's critical. And I love my coaching group. Those guys work their backsides off for the club and for me. They have, you know, sleepless nights watching oppositions play. They're all constantly seeking the trends of the game. You know, what's Richmond doing with their forward 50 stoppages? What are Essendon doing at D50? You know, what's Hawthorn doing at their midfield stoppages or centre bounce? So we're always constantly looking to make sure we stay ahead of the curve. We don't want to always be chasing. And there's obviously some things that we've done, which I'm sure other clubs have looked at as well. So I'm very fortunate. I've had the same coaches since I started, and those guys have been fantastic for me.
A couple of interesting inclusions this year, mature people, Eddie Betts, who you've mentioned, and yep. James Podliardi. In your opinion, what have they brought to the club?
Yeah, incredible, those two guys. Firstly, Podsy, and you know, Geelong people were very sad to see him go. He's 32 years old. But for us, having Taylor Walker missing the first seven games of the season, coming back from his knee reconstruction, we needed a key forward. But having worked with James and having known James for so long, I knew what he could give to our group from a coaching point of view, from an experience point of view. Our key forwards are very young. So Walker, Jenkins, McKernan, even our key backs. Outside of Ben Rutten, we've got Kyle Hardigan and Daniel Talia, who are both under 22. Our key position players are very young. So Pods almost acts as another coach for us. And the work that he's done behind the scenes during the week, reviewing games, preparing players for upcoming opponents, has been priceless. Fortunately, his form has also been very good. And if you just looked at goals scored, you wouldn't say that's the reason he's in the side. But we wouldn't have won that Western Bulldogs game here a month ago if he wasn't playing. I don't think we would have won the Collingwood game last Thursday night if James wasn't playing. His work both ends, his experience, you know, running back into defence at the right time to get a spoil in, taking a critical mark in the forward line when it really mattered. He's been a great addition for us. And Eddie's, I mentioned before about Eddie lives with Charlie Cameron, and Eddie had never met Charlie Cameron when we drafted him. So Eddie's moved with Anna and his little boy Lewis to Adelaide in November. A month later, he's now got one of our recruits living with him, you know. So Eddie's another one who is so team-focused. And we've seen, he's too selfless. He should be leading the goal kicking at times, it feels like. Yeah. But he'll want to handball a ball backwards in the goal square so his teammate can kick it. And I think that stems from, Chris Yaron and Jeff Gartlett, his former teammates, and Eddie at Carlton had a little competition that who could lead Carlton for score assists. Yes. And I think that's sort of continued at Adelaide. He loves bringing his teammates into the game. He loves tackling. He's top five in the competition over the last five seasons for forward 50 tackles. So we love that forward pressure. And it's a big game for him today. You know, he's his former club. I know Yaron and Gartlett have both been, you know, texting him all week and G'ing him up. So that's almost a bit of a subplot today, is to see how Eddie plays against his former team.
Footy's transformed in South Australia, and we all observe that with the Adelaide Oval. But there's another dynamic. Is the Crows have always been South Australia's team, and from a national perspective now, it's Port Adelaide. It's Port Adelaide because of what they're doing and the manner in which they're doing it. Are you aware, or would you describe it as a pitched battle between the two clubs for the hearts and minds in South Australia, or how does it sit in your mind?
Oh, some would see it like that, I think, but certainly not for us at Adelaide. I mean, we are focusing on how to make the Adelaide Football Club better every day, and that's on field and off field. Without question, we notice that what Port are doing, you have to applaud the way they've turned that footy club around. You know, Hinkley, Kosh, Darren Burgess has got him super fit. They're kicking a lot of goals. They're doing some things which they need to be applauded for, and we certainly recognise that. But we would waste a lot of energy if we tried to constantly look at our neighbour and see what, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. But we've still got a fantastic supporter base. We still have 70% of market share in Adelaide. We still are the team for all South Australians. We do hope.
You're in marketing now.
but we do hope. I mean, it'll be great. I mean, we, and Kenny and I talk openly about this, even with the media in Adelaide. I mean, how good would a Port Adelaide Crows prelim final be at Adelaide Oval? I mean, that place, it's rocking now.